Dr. Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about a trip from Sydney to Melbourne. Part of this is where I'll describe a few little observations on the way through. That's part of my cognitive rehab to actually store, recall, retrieve things. And this is the second time. It's I'm just going for a walk here in Melbourne about 9 o'clock at night, and there's birds awake in the trees above. It's slightly night time. I'm just looking at this. There's lots of birds under this, so there must be that's a whole series of birds awake at night. But let me describe now. What happened is around I think 10:20, we caught the train from Glen Gorge into the city. Pretty uneventful thing where I'm going for to support my wife for a two-day conference, board meeting, annual general meeting of Blindness Society, the Australian Blindness Society. And I'm just trying to think any of the, I suppose, major observations. We went into Central Station, which is a 18th century large multi-station, and walked from the country lines across into the airport line. Now, the airport actual station is a private station, and so the free companion travel we have for people supporting blind people doesn't work. So there was a bit of a song and dance actually getting a ticket for that one couple of stops into the station there. One of the things I did note is the artwork on the stations going in. They had a map of Sydney and used rather artfully shading to give it just a slight three-dimensional look to the circles indicating the stations, and they managed to actually shrink the size of the buildings, and may select say a representative skyscraper for each block. So Sydney's actually quite dense. It's got quite a dense skyline in the central region, and has got building codes which only allowed skyscrapers gauge to occur in the satellite areas of Sydney. So there's beginning to be reasonable high-rise in Penrith, Parramatta, Chadstone, Northern Sydney, Sydney itself. Certain areas there's little rises of high-rise flats coming up, but the rest is fairly flat. Now this contrasts with Melbourne, which has a very open density of high-rise buildings. So Melbourne looks a bit like a section of New York, but it's a very open, almost an eerie view of sort of like 10 very high skyscrapers, so there'd be 60 stories across, going across as you're going, and is visible from a very large area. So Melbourne itself compared to Sydney is very flat. There's no, well, Melbourne's got Port Phillip Harbour, but this is a massive harbour. I suppose if you talk, oh, it's a bay rather than a harbour. It's such a large entrance into it. So yeah, I suppose the thing of note for me is this, the graphics of these pictures, representations of Sydney. It's actually quite a warm night in Melbourne as I'm walking along here, and there's Melbourne's a city of trams, and The tram routes are quite extensive, generally going, or some of them are 60 to 100 kilometres long, and so you get these ribbons of steel going down the street, and it's a very normal thing, so that's what I can say at this point in time. But we're still going into the city. How can I describe it? That it's just these large posters, representations of Sydney. For me, it was very graphically appealing, simply because of their representation gave a sense of calm and space and orientation. It just picked the right sense. I suppose the only thing, I just got to recall things of note, going through from you can hear going past, that's one of the Melbourne trams. They sound vastly different from the older Melbourne trams, which had air pressure brakes, and the air pressure would have to go up. And these are used by silicon-controlled rectifiers, and it's the trams themselves can travel at very high, actually quite high speed. They get up to the speed limit of 60 kilometres an hour very quickly. They're very high speed trams, but I think they're just trams developed all over the world. There were Swiss trams. These are probably made in China, but they're made of lightweight metal, and the magic, and I think it was may have been developed in Australia. In Australia, is the reason that trams are so quiet is that they have metal rims, but inside the metal rims is about an inch of rubber, and this means that the actual rail is very, very quiet going through. And of course, they have to have a tag to get conduction to that rim, which would be insulated by rubber, to get going. So I've forgotten what they're called. So they're hybrid. Although they're metal rims, there's actually a fairly large, chunky rubber sense, and they're now computer. I believe they're computer stabilized. That is the vibrations and bumps are compensated by active computer control going across here. Okay, getting back into the airport, a fairly standard check-in going through there. We had a period of time to go through various shops. Here comes another tram. That's blinding speed. I can't believe it's going so fast. So, there you go for the technology for you. So, catching that. Shops, which I can sort of get a general recollection of what they are. The thing that struck me was a particularly cute infant case. So this is for 3-year-olds, and it's a airport carry-on luggage case which you can drag behind you, much like those big Samsonite cases on 4 wheels, except you can actually sit on this and ride it as a little ride-on horse, but then it can actually split in two. And I was particularly enamored with that. Wasn't able to check out the price there. There was various airport. So that was a piece of airport. Well, I think the word for it is shindigu. This is something which has got a lot of technology associated with it, or design. But it's really a bit stupid all up. I think the Japanese word for this type of thing is shindigu. In terms of, there was a few other airport shops. Pretty boring type of stuff. I'd be surprised if you're still listening to this at this point in time, but I'm still need the practice of recall. And we looked at the airport bookshops, and the airport bookshop was a bit L-shaped, and there was a little coffee lounge in it, which is this idea, strange thing of the bookshop also being a place a bit like a library, a coffee lounge, which you go back and pick up the books. I can't remember, and this is my self-test, I can't remember the particular title. This is a standard Shane Warne book, which is there. I must admit, there wasn't the completely trashy airport lounge books, which I associate with very low quality stuff, like the Seven Habits books or management books by Business Harbour School. So for some reason that they must have done their dash. I don't think people who are at airports in Australia, at least, are at all looking for inspiration. By the time I get to an airport, they're unlikely to pick up a crappy book. I don't know exactly what that is. There was also a wine sellers club, and they offered us a small little drink of bubbly, which we had, but then we were able to hear about the Wine Cellars Club, which is a, it's got a role of allegedly matching people's tastes, researching you and educating you, so that it's probably worthwhile. We would probably drink a bottle every 6 months or something like that, but if you're into drinking a bottle a week, they can get discount prices and deliver it to you a bottle a week, and they research, educate you. You write notes about the wines that you like. They read the notes, collect it up. They can actually arrange tours, get you to meet people who are interested in a similar wine taste to you. Their origin, the Hunter Valley, and the support of Australian wine labels, a sort of a different model path to market. I'm sort of now going. It doesn't sound much, but it was sold to us as very for everyone's benefit. Approach. How does that? It's got having an education and appreciation approach. I don't know. I'm always a bit dubious. Oh, here, this is the new bridge which I'm coming across here. It's quite warm. I'm now walking on the edge of Glass Creek, which flows into the Yarra, which flows into Port Phillip Bay, and this is a new structure built in this place called Kilby Reserve. So I grew up around here, and when I very, very first grew up, there were horses and cows opposite, and then in the large they were pulled out of this area, and there was horses and I think mostly horses in the paddocks at the back, and eventually they've gone and been replaced with playing fields and development. There still hasn't been, all of the houses have been knocked down and built with very large houses. It's sort of, I can recognise a few of the older houses. Of course, our one's been knocked down and built. It was a fantastic, the home-built house. So this man knew nothing about engineering, so built everything super thick, and it leaked water like anything. That was our place. But I must admit, we got onto the, we were back at the airport, went to Gloria Jean's, had a, an almond croissant heated up, cut in half, and a mocha, ice mocha chocolate, which was nice, and our, I don't know, the, having recovered from the heart stuff and cognitively over, it's a real, starts to be overloaded, all the tastes again, and hearing slightly different again. I suppose the note of going in to the airport that's been done up and sealed up, there's certain areas that you can see that they've missed. So they've missed doing some of the tiling on the roof. This is on the false ceiling ties that, you know, the, get these wires hanging down, suspending these aluminium rods, and you get these insulating sound, insulating tiles. That's partly to deaden the sound as much as anything. And some of those were a little bit old. But I suppose the other thing before we talk about the takeoff and the new aircraft, I was pretty impressed with the large numbering signs for the gates, because they were numbered by pixels covered with different amount of squares, where the percentage of squares was covered by a let's say red, say up to 90%, and moving up at 45 degrees up to the right, the last percentage would be white, or that would be varied to 50-50 or 10-90, in such a way for this area that you had a the number 6 to the writing, and the actual edge was softened, but in a hard way, by about 10 pixels in, so you, it would look from a distance a very soft thing, and then the end of the writing would go in a light sweep of colour, so a sweep of shade of red. And so this graphic, so the graphic was as tall as you, the numbers on there was a very a good way, because it meant that you were standing there and you weren't the actual wall in which the number was written wasn't in your face. You didn't have a hard edge with the edge, so it gave it a sense of a greater sense of space. Coming over there, so I was impressed by that. The actual aircraft was some sort of Boeing one with the wings, 737, I think, 3x3 seats. It was very nice. The person who took our ticket was helping us the whole way in, and took the bags and checked up, and I was a bit concerned. I thought, look, you're leaving a bit late to get out of the aircraft, but she was actually, in fact, a hostess who checked us, was at the front and checked us. I think it was supposed to be hostess, who would be an air steward. It's now part of this push of gender neutral. You'll be interested that the Australian law no longer on your birth certificates, they don't say the number of brothers and sisters you have. They say the total number of siblings, and in some states they don't assign a gender at birth for things. Perhaps it's taking it a little bit far, and so rather than hostess or hostie, I think it's still a hostie, we say air stewardess. But we got up. I suppose what impressed me was I really love before the takeoff, before you wait and take off, you have this background. Wow. Oh, there's some fairly big fruit bats up here. There's bats all over the place as I walk along here. It's a pretty amazing aspects there. The what impressed me was the safety instruction was very artfully done, because they mixed the safety instruction with all the major cities that they talked about. So they showed someone getting in a New York taxi and, you know, sold the idea of traveling overseas, but then she talked about the belt. And then someone was mountaineering somewhere in San Diego or something like that, going up, and then they talk about the oxygen going up there. And then it shows how powerful this ad was. There was someone in Queenstown, water rafting. They showed about the safety sets. There was something in Japan about the lighting. So they picked the selling points of. So it was really rather interesting. I thought rather well done. The little LCD screens fell down an angle, and it's apparently what had happened is that, oh, far out. Whoa, talk about bats. This is bat mania. There's bats all over the place. I think there's people coming around with powerful lights looking up at the bats. Because that's what I think they're doing. Look, this area of housing bats is a new thing. When I was a kid, there was none of all these bats. And so these are quite big bats, right? They're the size of, well, small chihuahuas on wings. So they're, you know, they're not, the wingspan of, oh, I don't know, more than half a meter, less than a meter, but body size of a small dog coming up. And so they're quite amazing. And they stink. Isn't that amazing? Okay. Yes, so the LCD pops down, and it's a great thing to see the acceleration of the plane, and then the flaps go down to create a sudden amount of lift for that speed, and the lift, so you get the speed increase and then a sudden speed to lift. So it's quite an exhilarating thing. Thing to get into the air, and it's fantastic to look out over the landscape and look at the structures of the Botany Bay. So the aircraft leaves the aircraft runways into Botany Bay. You look over Botany Bay, and so Botany Bay is a large. It's a circular bay, a bit like Port Phillip Bay. It's a bay rather than a harbour. So Sydney Harbour, what's it? Port Jackson. That's the formal name for Sydney Harbour. It's the informal name. The formal name is Port Jackson or Jackson Harbour. Is where all the famous opera house is. This is a much more shallow place. Underneath you see these big sandbanks and walking paths and a lot of nature there. And you, Australia, although it feels very developed, there's large amounts of greenery. You can look out as the plane climbs up, and you can see Wollongong, which is the next city underneath. On a sort of a coastal fringe with cliffs behind it, and the substantial white foam area as the waves come in to look at it, and past the clouds, up into the clouds, and the overall journey in. I suppose what I found interesting is the earphones and the mechanism they had for the double plugs, and the fact that you could pull those double plugs out. These are complementary earphones, so I believe The idea was you weren't paying for them. I don't know whether you were supposed to return them. I didn't. I've took them off because I went after some earphones, because the $2 earphones I have are pretty crappy. And we'll have a look at it. It's a red bug. Like, it's actually quite hot here. Oh, this is worthwhile. So this is a... wow. This is just incredible. So this is a little water dam, I suppose. And the idea of trees being on the edge of this is most amazing. So since my youth, all these trees have grown up. I don't know if you can hear the actual... the absolute amount of bird life, ducks and frogs here. And unfortunately the frogs, I don't know if you can hear the frogs there, the Lord of the Marsh frogs, so there's some different frogs in there, so there's a fair amount of frogs. There'll be birds and various things. This is a little place around here. There used to be, I'm sure if you keep it up, there'll be a fairly substantial playground. And this is one of the things that I did notice in England in particular, there weren't the very large kids' playgrounds, play equipment everywhere. For some reason, that wasn't a major feature of at least the places in Essex or the small villages I came across. And looking over here, so the earplugs, how that could come, and I looked at how the actual junction of these earplugs was affixed to the standard 3.5 mil, would be less, so it's 3.5 mil stereo jack into the dual mono jack, and the way that there's a hitch knot in there, and I looked at it and I was thinking how you would undo it, and over the time I've just mentally came to me how you would undo it, which is just pull it back and thread underneath the hitch, the actual bike, the actual block. Okay, so this is there's a substantial playground here, which is fun, but they've also built a cricket clubhouse, and there's people running around at night. Looking at the light, here's a emergency alarm. Oh no, it's wow, it's there's red lights going on. This is one of the toilets, pushed open door. So these are these new Excel poo toilets. So these are these new automatic toilets that they have in Australia that at night. I don't know, for some reason they don't work at night. They're probably programmed to be shut, but they speak and talk and clean. So these new electronic toilets there. So they're at night, they're blinking away to guide you to them at night, and there are people out here At night, as we were up in the air, I suppose the innovation I rather also liked is they gave you lunch, and it's this sealed little box, and inside the box you peel it out, there's a heated pie. So if you can imagine a cardboard little box, they must stick in the microwave to come out. Now there's a whole people playing, there's a basketball court they put there at night. So I'm walking through a park. So these are quite nice small chicken pies, which I rather enjoyed, in a small square box. So this is unusual for me. And bear in mind, I had travelled 12 months before in a plane, and I could not remember it at all. And I said to my wife, I find this really exciting. It's been a while since I've been in a plane, and I had completely forgotten 12 months ago the actual sequence of flying in the plane. But now that I'm cognitively up, I obviously can remember it. I remember all the details a lot more. So there's certain things I do remember about coming up for the underneath train station underneath Sydney Airport, the two sets of escalators up to the departure area, and then that's one further towards Terminal 3, back towards Terminal 3, and then a set of three really small escalators to get up to the, sorry, from the arrivals to the departure land, the departure lounges. I suppose one of the things was also seeing the touchdown and the application of forces. I suppose what really impresses me from robotics is that you can really program the shape by controlling the third derivative of the acceleration. That is, if you want to accelerate something, apply a force, is the second derivative, you push it forward. But if you want to shake it like buggery, is that you can suddenly accelerate and suddenly decelerate. And what it means is that your force travels at the speed of sound into your object, and your object will decompose the force impulses in a Fourier way. So you'll get a high frequency shake, low frequency shake. It has a energy response to forces, and so you can actually set a bound on the third derivative, and that was one of the things that did really impress me, in that the ramp leading into the amount of force and down to the amount of force, so the third derivative of the acceleration was very well controlled coming in. One of the things I did notice in Melbourne is that most things have been rebuilt, but there was still the old observation deck. Now, back in the 60s, when the 707s used to come in, people used to go out to the airport for the day and look at the 767 coming. You get a special ticket to go up to the observation deck, and that's all been sealed off now, but there's still that the airport's been rebuilt, and except that you've got that what appears to be the old observation deck up there. It's also interesting to see them deload the luggage, and this is on the sort of conveyor belts out of the bag. I was able to watch the two sets, and they have it a way that they don't really stack. It was watching easy, interesting to watch the two people work together. I noted that the tyres had four green spray prints on it, which I would assume is to control the rotation of the tyres. I just can't. I suppose what was interesting was the going through from the arrivals down to baggage claim. I just got to really run that in my head. Yeah, so the arrivals, you get the departures at the top, arrivals at the bottom, and going out the airport into the baggage pickup, you go through a series of doors which open and close fairly close behind you, but there's a series of three doors and dog legs, so that's assuming that I don't know, there's not people rushing through. I do remember in the old days there used to be manned with people going through it. I do also going all the way back to the hostie going in, we're having a detailed discussion with her about I suppose I've learnt, she said, where do you come from, blah blah blah, then repeat back to her, where did you come from, how are you feeling, tell us. And we heard all about how she left her husband at home to do two loads of washing, and how that was considered quite a lot to do, and he was doing various things, is negotiating with power companies and insurance companies to get lower premiums. Now, feeling about this is that this is a profoundly, this is an activity that we all have to do, is get on the phone and see if you can get a lower price for the utilities, the gas and the electricity. But this is a profoundly unproductive use of everybody's time. It's a profoundly unproductive addition of complexity that when you look at the product and the consumption, this is an activity which is inserted in between the two, which is profoundly unproductive. And my thoughts, yeah, I just hang my head in shame to think about what has capitalism come to. The surprisingly drive home, I could go through the different getting tickets and stuff like that, but I won't go through all the description of it, but I suppose the important thing is that I've got good recall of the colour of the floors and the layouts and the position of the car coming back. But our position is coming along the Tullamarine Freeway, which is another multi-billion dollar effort, which flows well, and then we began to pick our way across Melbourne in a process which I think is a bit mad. One of the things is that obviously the Melbourne Trams, but also differences in I was just trying to really pick out the differences in Melbourne traffic lights. I don't think Melbourne has as many LED traffic lights, but they also have something which is a little bit different than New South Wales. Their traffic lights are jet black outside, so they look a bit like stage props. You know, the stage lighting, whereas the New South Wales one have, a thin white line, which differentiates position of the light, and so your eye has a few more visual clues than the three colours. So I have to actually give my ticket of approval to New South Wales one. So New South Wales is 1,000 kilometres, 700 kilometres further north than Melbourne. So it's subtropical. Well, Melbourne's stinking hot at the moment. I'm actually quite hot walking, but the main aim there. The other, I suppose, there's other aspects to I suppose Victoria. There's very long, heavy historical traffic and features that you go to, and I'm sure we went a fairly complicated way. We went around the back of Melbourne University through Royal Park, which is a fairly substantial part of parkland. Because it's a parkland, the road's not winded, so it's really a fairly narrow two-lane arterial road, which is a recipe for a block. And of course, all of Melbourne is being solved by these massive tunnels, and a little tunnel underneath it. But the moment you go past that, and in the middle of the park, there's a tram which goes across to stop at the zoo. There's a zoo there, and you go past Melbourne Cemetery, which is more than full. On the other side is the colleges, university colleges, and then you're still a good, half an hour till you hit the Eastern Freeway, and come home to Victoria. I'm just looking at the amount of time I'm speaking to it. I suppose I'm going to speak a little bit further. I don't really go into family stuff and eating dinners and stuff like that. But one of the things is that we went out to lunch on... it's called the Snow Pony. It's a little classic Melbourne cafe. So Melbourne is alive with these cafes and eating places. I seriously do mean alive. It's a real cafe place. Sydney is too, but there are sort of favourite hotels and restaurants. I think Bar Italia. There's various Chinese restaurants that people all go to in Sydney. But in Melbourne, it's almost every place has a reasonably good cafe with atmosphere here. Now this is called Snow Pony, and it has a white pony on the outside with big red lips and various... I was very attracted to the kids' menu until it was pointed out that I couldn't have it until I was under 12. Stuff like that, because I like the references to the pony fodder and stuff like that. And I had, what is it, a very beautiful riddled salmon salad with avocado, and well, obviously a huge chunk of riddled salmon. I suppose what was so typically Melbourne is that there were features left from the 1960s, the sort of pressed plaster on the outside, and the lighting was industrial street lights hung down, obviously with not industrial street lights in them. But it's very obvious how they were hung down, and the actual plug and wiring, or there's large loops of wiring holding it all together to position it. So I just cut transmission as I was walking past this lady at a bus stop, and it's a bit creepy having someone talking to a dictaphone. You can sort of hear them coming off, and you can see she's obviously a little bit distressed by a creepy old man walking along. Back to the cafe. There's lots of things I liked. The table was a bit shaky, and I, of course, didn't worry about it. They picked up about it, and there's these screws, legs at the base, and the manager was there, and he had... it's righty-tighty, lefty-loosey was how he's told to tighten things. Of course, if it's the opposite direction, if you're staying above the bolt and you want to move the bolt out. I myself don't think that actually helps, because you don't know what left and right means in terms of clockwise, anti-clockwise, and my terminology for that is clockwise is lockwise. Yeah, clockwise is lockwise. To actually get those two terminology, and of course, except in poisonous gases, so you get the threads pointing the opposite direction for. If you've got bottles of fluorine and things like that. I suppose I was memorising a tape measure on the top of the desks, on top of the counters, the top counter, bottles, cakes. I'm just obviously trying to memorise and improve. All that. Then we went for the normal thing is to go for a walk if the weather's not too hot. It's the standard thing, but in this case we went for a drive around Melbourne, and what's different is that people are building very high-rise apartment blocks with Chinese money at the centres. In Box Hill, there was high-rise blocks, and with the very obvious use of cladding. So this is an evening, night, you can hear me walking past. I'm walking, walking home now. I suppose the other thing which really notice in Melbourne is that a lot of the roofs are tiled roofs. In fact, almost all the roofs of all the old homes are tiled roofs. And at the back of our place, there's a home, and it's a bit run down, and it's a bit run down, and so you can see the walls sag a bit, and the actual tiled roof, it's a bit like it's pretty forgiving, whereas I don't know, your corrugated roofs, things fall about pretty quickly. I don't know why it's so hard working. Yeah, I'm just, so Melbourne is full of heaps of 1960s, 70s triple-fronted houses, and there's something very familiar about them. The various other, there's one or two fairly rickety run-down hotels around the place, which have been there since my childhood, and it's sort of mostly mostly it's a three-star hotel. So this is a triple-fronted house with a large brick wall on going past to this triple-fronted brick. So triple-front means that there's a bedroom, a little... This is another... These are all classic houses, tiles in front of this one. So it's Melbourne's spread with suburbia, and there's just sort of these classic rich houses from the, from the 60s and 70s, mostly 1960s, and it's a really rather beautiful. It's hard to say what the difference is in the... In Sydney, they just knock down and rebuild, the house. There's a lot more fibro houses, so this is asbestos sheeting, which is all okay. What happens is that they clad the outer side with cement, and so it's only a bit of a bother. They're pretty safe. Safe and fireproof. The houses, it's a bit more cold here, so the houses tend to be brick, whereas in Sydney it's a little bit different. It's designed for cooling. These are classics. You could easily forgive yourself from believing that you're going back in history for it. There's the other thing with Melbourne. I can't see it too often here, but our house has got... These are some pretty amazing, fantastic houses walking past. This is a queue. I suppose it's supposed to be well-to-do. It's known as a well-to-do, wealthy suburb. I mean, yeah. This is old money places. It's a pretty big, big houses here. Yeah, there's a lot of evaporative cooling, but not here. These are basic fans with water sprayed in them. You get these big mats with water sprayed on them. The water evaporates, cools down, and essentially you have to let them... It moistens the air, so the air is fairly dry. So it makes the air more breathable inside your house, and it's quite cool, and you get quite a cool house really quickly with these evaporative coolers. Yeah, I wish I was better at describing sort of the flat leafiness of Melbourne. With fairly consistently broad manicured streets, as opposed to Sydney, which goes through crazy things. And there's on the hill now, I can see across, it's like some sort of spaceport. There's a dome of a Catholic Sacred Heart Church illuminated on the horizon here. It's a bizarre thing that it's not been done in my youth, but they have lights here. Melbourne definitely has an older world feel than Sydney, because it still uses it's as if the LED revolution hasn't come here. The fact there's very few LED lights, so the street lights have got this old world charm, where the in Sydney, there's a whole heap of LED lights, and so that's changed the shadow. So your shadow is broken up, and there's a lot harder light, and it's I don't know. There's the LEDs that can control the light distribution, so you get very much a pool, a sort of like a Gaussian light distribution. I suppose it would be, you know, I'm just trying to work out what distribution it would be coming down from here. So I can't really, I wish I could give a better description of what Melbourne's like, but there you go. I suppose the amazing thing is that I'm super aware of better cognitive function. So the first time I came over, all I could remember is I can't remember the flight over. This is this is from December. Yeah, it would have been a few months after. I couldn't remember the flight over whatsoever. I could remember the traffic in some instances. And it was sort of like a photo rerun. It was the same board meeting that we came to last year. So this... I don't understand how this really works up. This is showing Kitchener Street all the way up. So this is Lord Kitchener to Kew East Primary School, which must be different from the one that I just walked past. And look, my legs are absolutely aching, so there must be something wrong. I have to look in it. And it's these low brick. You get such a homey feeling in Melbourne, and so nothing's changed. However, if you want to go to a place where nothing ever changes, and that's Adelaide, you can go back parts of Adelaide, and they have not changed since the 1960s, partly because South Australia is so brutally dry. So fences, nothing rots, it's really brutally dry, and the thing is that they don't use wood a lot of the time. A lot of the power poles are made out of concrete, a lot of the fences are made out of metal and corrugated iron from railway sleepers. Adelaide, you can go back and nothing has changed. And I have to say here, nothing's changed. Occasionally, people have knocked out houses and replaced it with 8 or 16 flats. So it gives you the idea of the size of these houses, that you can knock one down and fit 2 stories high of 8 flats in it. I think we're in a house, a set of flats. They're not flats, they're sort of, I suppose you'd call them townhouses. No, they're flats. And for our one, it's a house that's been knocked down, and they've been able to put 3 houses in it. So it's fairly, fairly spacious and good looking. I suppose the major thing here is trying to pick up how much I can recall, and I'm working all the time observing and trying to memorize things. Thanks for listening. I'm nearly back home, and this is much of a nothing podcast, but I'll put it out there. Another podcast, another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.